What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Meyrin Podcast. Today, my guest is Megan Oldham. Megan is one of the top free skiers in the world right now. At 21, she already accomplished a ton. She won the Crystal Globe in her first season on the World Cup circuit back in 2019. She already has 5 X Games medals, and she went to last year's Beijing Olympics and competed in both slopestyle and big air. It was a super good talk where we discussed about a bunch of subjects ranging from her growing up in Ontario and getting into free skiing after years of gymnastics and figure skating, her incredible rise from local competitions to World Cups in the span of 2 years, becoming one of the top skiers in her discipline and adapting along the way, going to Beijing last winter for the Olympics, and much, much more. Big thanks to the patrons on Patreon, Raph Diaz, Will Cameron, and Laurent-Olivier Martin. Also, big shout out to the sponsors, Axis Board Shop, Planks Clothing, and Dick Ann's Restaurant. Let's go. Megan Oldham, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, well, likewise. I'm glad we get to talk. You're part of the new generation of women that are killing it right now, especially in Canada. So it's dope to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
I guess we'll get to talk about you. You've had a crazy 2022 season, X Games, Beijing, all of that. But I wanted to start off by talking about your youth, kind of, because it's crazy to see the new generation coming up. And sometimes we don't get really to know your story or where you come from or how you got to that point, because right now you're one of the best skiers in your sport, getting, what are you now, at 5 medals at X Games?
Yes, it's crazy.
Where did it start for you? Because I'm from Quebec, you're from Ontario. It's pretty similar where mountains aren't the best, you know? There's a lot of pros that come out and do great in the sport, but the odds aren't in our favor, kind of. How was it for you getting into free skiing, or, you know, getting the itch to do that?
Yeah, for sure. So for me, I kind of grew up like with my family. My parents were both really active. And obviously I have two brothers who are super active. So we would always go out west and visit some of my mom's family out there. And whenever we would do that, every year we'd go skiing. So it was kind of just like a family thing where every year we'd go out to some bigger mountains out west and do some downhill skiing. And I always loved it, but I never really thought much of it. Growing up, I was super into gymnastics and figure skating. So that was my main focus, like sports wise. It was like training for gymnastics 3 nights a week, skating 2 nights a week. So I didn't really think much of skiing. And then kind of like as I went through high school, I was starting to slow down with gymnastics and figure skating. And my brother was starting to get into the freestyle scene. So he kind of like pushed me, encouraged me, and was like, "Hey, Megan, like, I think you'd be super good at this. And like, we both really like skiing. You should just come out with me and try it a few times, hit the park, do some rails." And at first I was completely against it. I was like, "No, like, I'm not interested in that. Doesn't really seem like my thing."
Why?
I don't even know. Like, I think for me, it was more of like an intimidation thing. Like, I'm definitely a super competitive person, and I don't really like being in the situation where I feel like I'm like being watched and like not super proud of my skills. So like being in the park and seeing all these boys and girls who are really good doing big tricks, and I'm on there like trying to learn how to slide a rail, like it was just intimidating for me as a kid.
That's a big part when you're young.
Totally.
Like, there's people that are 20 years old doing big tricks, and the first step of getting comfortable on boxes and rails is I remember that part. It's intimidating, you're right.
It's super hard. Yeah, and I think it's with like any sport. I'm sure lots of people feel that. Like, nobody really likes to do anything that they're not good at. So to like be in front of everybody and like feel like you're being watched on the chairlift and you're still like at that stage where you're just really beginner, it's tough for sure. But it was nice having my brother, because he was kind of there as somebody who was like supporting me, watching me do tricks. So I'd get tips from him, and I kind of felt like not everybody was watching me, because he was kind of there supporting me and like cheering for me when I'd learned something new. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I did a lot of backyard skiing as a kid, because like you say, Ontario and Quebec don't really have the biggest hills. So like we would spend weekends and we'd have a little backyard setup. We'd have a PVC and we would just hike up and down, and my brother would show me how to do tricks. So I kind of just followed him that way, and it grew to be something bigger.
Yeah, that's dope. There's a lot of stories like that in free skiing where there's the siblings that bring you up or that mentor you, kind of.
Totally.
So many pros that have bigger brothers. There's too many to count, really. Like there's the Logan family, there's the Wells family, there's the Gagne family, there's and so on and so on and so on. It's really it seems like always the younger sibling gets a lot of a plus from getting the older sibling kind of coaching them.
100%. Yeah. And that's definitely our family as well. Like I have a younger brother who's he's now 14, and he's also getting to freestyle skiing. And like, just because he's had both of us to kind of lean on and like get advice and not have to learn for himself necessarily. And he's getting so good so quick. And both of my brothers and I are like, damn, like we wish that we had more of that. So it's cool.
How was it for you getting we talked a bit about the struggle of starting in the park scene. What was the easiest or maybe the hardest part for you? Jumping is different. You know, some people are more comfortable with jumping. Some people have a easier time with rails. And plus you have that figure skating background. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, because I talked with Kaya Tursky, and there was a big part that helped her with a rollerblading. Because mm-hmm. she was already doing like street rails and rollerblades. So then that was an easy part for her. What was it for you?
For sure. Yeah. For me, like I would say, like definitely from gymnastics and figure skating, I felt like I had a really good air awareness already. So I definitely felt a little bit more comfortable in the jumps to start off. I definitely struggled a little bit more with the rails because that wasn't really something I was used to. I definitely had the balance aspect from gymnastics, which I think helped. So it's just trying to learn off of those skills. But I do remember like distinctively one of the hardest parts for me, like as I was really getting into the sport, was trying to learn how to like spin off axis, because I had been taught all my life, like when you're figure skating, you're only spinning upright. And then same with gymnastics, it's just backflips. Like your feet are always going directly over your head. So that was really weird for me. I remember my brother was trying to help me on our backyard trampoline and like learning how to do corks and misties. I was like, I don't understand. Like this feels so uncomfortable to not like look directly over top of my feet, like to do a different axis. So that was a big barrier for me. And it took some time for sure to get used to like spotting at different places and figure out where I was in the air when I was doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I had the same experience with, childhood friends that were really into gymnastics, mm-hmm. and they eventually like stayed in that, and now they're in the Cirque du Soleil.
Totally.
And so they're really like in the classic gymnastic type of spinning, and I was showing them videos of X Game stuff where they do triple corks, and they couldn't understand, like they're like, I couldn't do that, like I don't understand that way of approaching it, like air sense wise.
Yeah, 100%, because you're doing like for them a back full, and it's completely different because it's a totally different takeoff, like different spots. So it is tricky for sure to make that transition.
And I guess the grab, you know, the aspect of grabbing your skis influences a lot how you set and maintain your speed, your spin, rather than, you know, just hocking kind of.
And that was hard for me too, as well. Like, especially the last few years, that's been something that I've really been trying to focus on, because again, like I'm used to spinning and in figure skating, you have your hands like right over your heart. So that's like the complete opposite of like down by your feet. So that was tricky too, like trying to learn how to like bring your knees up in the air and like hold on to that and trust yourself that you're going to get around. But it takes some time and you get used to it.
And you said you had a good starting point balance wise.
Yeah,
that I guess that's a really good thing to have, because for a lot of people that's a hard thing when they get in, is, you know, having not the best balance necessarily, and then when you start your first rails you eat shit. Yeah. And that can be, I've seen a lot of people say like, okay, I'm done, because they eat shit like five times and they're like, yeah, I'm just gonna stick to like carving.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like you definitely also, like when you're starting the sport, have to just be like, accept the fact that you're going to fall a lot and it's going to be embarrassing. because even with the balance that I had, I for sure was falling all the time. Like, so it takes some courage to kind of just get into it and try not to care what people think.
To put people in perspective, when was the transition for you? Like, at what age was your first years, like, in the park with the twin tips and all that?
Yeah, so I was pretty old. Like, I guess I would have started, like, maybe my first ever time when I was, like, 14 skiing. And then by the time I was, like, 15, I was...
Just skiing plainly? Like,
well, no. So I started skiing, like, on normal downhill skis just with my family resort style when I was probably, like, 5. And then I did that all my life. So that was a good start. And then by the time I got into park, it wasn't until I was like 14, 15.
Okay. Well, I think that that's a classic, like, where most people are like that. They, you know, they ski casually, and then it's in the teenage years where park skiing comes into place.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's crazy. Like, right now you're 21?
Yeah.
So 21. From 14, first time hitting rails, to like 21 doing both ways dub 12. There's something natural going on there.
Yeah, no, it is crazy. Like, looking back, I'm like, wow, the years just flew by so quick, and it really wasn't that long. Like, yeah, no, it's cool.
And now it's time for a first sponsor break. I'm stoked to have Dick Ann's Restaurants as a sponsor once again this season. I've been a lifetime fan, so I'm always happy to share the good word. Dick Ann's is a family-owned fast food restaurant chain with 12 locations in the Montreal region. They've been famous since 1954 for their great food, especially their flat hamburgers and their spicy sauce. Talking about their sauce, it's been available since last year in many Metro grocery stores all over Quebec. Dick Ann's is my number one fast food spot, so if you come by Montreal, you gotta check it out. Support companies that support skiing. Support Dick Ann's Restaurants. It's something that we get to hear a lot from, I guess, the older generations. You know, people like in the generation of Henrik and Phil Casaubon, hearing what inspired them or motivated them when they were young, like seeing the competitions or movies or whatnot. How was it like for you in your generation in Ontario with your family and all of that? Like, except, well, it may be also the local scene, but was there something else like that inspired you, like, to go to free skiing? Was it movies or edits or anything in particular?
Yeah, so for me, like, it was a little bit different because I wasn't really even aware of the sport. Like, it wasn't even something that I knew really existed until my brother started getting into it. So he was really the big picture person for me that pushed me into it and kind of got me excited about the sport. Mm-hmm. And like, with that, like, as he started to get more into it, he would come and he'd show me videos and edits and parts and stuff like that, and we'd watch them together, and it would definitely get me excited. But like, when I was starting, I wasn't even aware that people were making films of them skiing and stuff. So that was like a completely new aspect of the sport to me. And I love it for sure. But I would say that my brother is probably the one person that's really inspired me and like pushed me to get into this space.
Yeah, it was the same for me, where I think it's that for a lot of people, where your first encounter is really your local scene, the local park and all of that. And
yeah,
because when you're 12, you're not necessarily... you know, it's the same for music, for everything, where you're still learning about the world. Like, you're not necessarily aware of it. Like, I used to get like given movies at Christmas from like the local ski shop, but if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have known.
Wouldn't
necessarily
know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then for when sure. You're older, you get on the internet and you realize there's a lot of stuff going on.
Totally. Yeah. You kind of need that person to introduce you to all that stuff and show you what people are watching and doing. And yeah.
How was it for you, like, going from first days in the park with the bro, learning rails, jumps, all of that, to saying, okay, I want to compete? Like, how did that transition go? Like, was it seeing that you had some talent, that you had some skills that maybe could go into competing?
Yeah, for me, like, it really started just as tagging along with my brother and his friends. And as I would go to the hill more, I started to make friends, and I found some girls who skied. I found some guys who skied that were my age, and it was more of just like a hobby. Like, every weekend, it's almost like hanging out with your friends at your house. It was just a fun activity that we would do. So I was always super excited just to go to the hill and ski and not really think about it. And then I just did that for a year or two, and I think it just the more I did every weekend, I felt I was starting to progress and learn tricks. And then my brother joined a team, so I kind of just followed along with that. And obviously, like, once you start working with a coach and stuff like that, you get introduced to the comp scene. And I've always been a competitive person for sure. And then as gymnastics and skating started to kind of disappear in my life, it was cool to just replace that with a different competitive sport. So it kind of just naturally fell into place. And I wasn't originally like, oh, I want to compete so bad. Like, I didn't even really know about it. And it kind of just came to be.
With the local clubs and all of that?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I just was local skier, hanging out, kind of got introduced to the smaller competitions and built up from there.
Back in the days, maybe like as far as or as soon as 10 years ago, there really was kind of not really a strict or a straight up way to get pro, let's say. It was really like buy a plane ticket to Colorado and go at the US Open and try and make, you know, there was like 0 to 100. But right now it's really structured. Like you have the World Cups, and before the World Cups you have the NORAMs in North America. And beforehand you have, I guess, the local competitions. How would you call the step below that?
For us it's called the Timber Tours. Might be different somewhere else.
That's in Ontario, the name?
Yeah.
But anyways, you have kind of the provincial level competitions, and then you could say the national, and then once you get on the national teams, then you go to World Cups. How is it these days for yourself and for the new generation going up? Like, what's the scene like competition-wise, and, you know, all that kind of team mentality? Not team mentality, but, you know, those competitions with levels to go up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that kind of shocked me is even as I went up in the competition circuit, like, it always stayed true to the same sort of environment. Like, I never felt like I was really competing against people and we were like hated each other and we're just trying to be the next best person. It always felt like I'm just skiing with my friends, we're at a competition, and we're all kind of just cheering each other on and doing our thing. Like, I kind of expected that as I got up to the World Cup level, a lot of the nations would be more separated and kind of doing their own thing. But it's really cool to see that the whole community of skiing is really connected and all the girls get together. We do stuff when we go to competitions. We're like cheering for each other. We're going out afterwards and doing activities and stuff. So I really love that aspect of it.
Did you see a difference between skiing and figure skating, gymnastics in that sense? Like the
totally
camaraderie, yeah, like, or how you'd say that?
Yeah, the camaraderie. The friendship?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so different, which is strange because, like, definitely, like, when I would show up to gymnastics competitions, it was like, this is our team, and everybody else is, like, just here for us to beat them. Like, it's kind of like soccer in high school. I don't know. It's just, like, that's the opponent, and, like, our job is to beat them. So it was so different. Like, and honestly, I think that's probably the biggest thing that I love about it because I also was super into cross-country running as a kid, and unfortunately, I just felt that, like, every time I'd go to a competition, it was so stressful. It was just like, I have to do well. Mm. Whereas when I'm at ski competitions, it's like, you know what? Like, I'm just here with my friends. We're skiing. And, like, it's not just all about the competition aspect. It's about, like, having time with everybody else and getting to know people and just skiing for fun and getting videos and all this. So I really think that helped and, like, made the sport more interesting for me.
Yeah. You're right. There's a big part in free skiing. I think that's you want to win a competition, let's say, but there's a big part that's also doing your best personally rather than like beating everybody else. You want to do your best up 12, you know, there's something personal about it.
Yeah. And I love that aspect of it for sure. Like, you just feel like you're challenging yourself rather than just being out there to like try and be the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With everyone doing their own trick. And the judging aspect, it's not as if you have control or there's a limitation of control. Like, if you look at some bigger competitions, everyone's doing different tricks with different grabs, different spins, different flips. You don't know where it's going to rank. You don't know, you know, if they're going to land it. It's just a matter of like doing your thing and then you'll see where it falls.
Totally. And for me, that was also something that was new because I was used to gymnastics competitions where we'd show up and it'd be like, you're not allowed to wear nail polish. You have to have your hair done up a certain way. You can only do these certain skills. You can pick from this spin or that spin. And it's so different in the fact that like I can go and I can do my slope run and say, hey, like, I don't want to do, like, nobody's going to be doing the same exact run. We're all going to be doing something different. And it's actually just judging based off of a whole variety of things rather than just like who did each trick better. Yeah. So that's cool.
Was that fun or like weird for you when you got, because that's the total opposite of what you were used to?
I loved that because I remember I felt like there wasn't as much freedom and self-expression within gymnastics that I kind of got like disappointed. I was like, every single person on my team is doing the exact same choreography. So like, this isn't really fun. Like, I don't really feel like I'm actually getting to show the skills that I like or the skills I feel I can do better.
Yeah.
And so to have that freedom in skiing, it was like, okay, sweet. Like, I can actually show the tricks that I'm more stoked on rather than like what people think are cool.
And now it's time for another sponsor break. If you listen to this podcast, you know Axis Board Shop is the dopest shop in skiing. They support athletes, movies, events, and a bunch of other stuff related to skiing and snowboarding. I've been to their shop recently, and they're ready for ski season. They've received all the new skis, boots, outerwear, and every other thing you'll need for this season. So if you're in Quebec, go check out Axis Boutique in Saint-Sauveur, or you can check them out online at axisboutique.ca. Support companies that support skiing. Support Axis Board Shop.
Yeah, that's cool to hear because you got the same problems as what the first people who started free skiing got, which was like a lot of people in the 90s were doing moguls, and moguls was really regimented and you weren't allowed to do grabs. You weren't allowed to do X, Y, and Z. And then they were like, well, that sucks. Let's go do something else. And it was a lot like, well, we want to do stuff like snowboarders are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and like, you know, kind of rebelled away from mogul skiing.
Yeah, for sure. That's super cool.
You did some local competitions. How did that go? And like, how long did it take for you to go onto that next stage of, more international level competitions?
Mm-hmm. So when I started, I obviously did the really local competitions. I remember my brother and I would always travel like a couple hours up to a different hill and we'd do like these weekend rail jams and stuff like that. So it was really like the like raw ski competition atmosphere. And then I got started into some like local competitions that were a little bit more structured. So the Timber Tour side, I think I maybe did like a couple of those. And then the following season when I was fully with a provincial team or a local team, I did the COT and NORAM circuit for a year and did really well on that. So that's kind of when I got transitioned into the next gen national team circuit.
So you did kind of one season on the local level, let's say in Ontario.
Yeah.
Then one season with the Ontario team, and then it was already national team.
Yeah. And the crazy part is I wasn't even with the Ontario team. It was like a local club. They're called Agenda Free Ski. They're still a club. And it's like within Ontario, but it isn't actually the Ontario team.
Okay. But is there an Ontario team?
There is, yeah. It's kind of changed over the years, but when I started, my brother was on the Ontario team and it was a full-fledged team and they would travel to Australia and stuff like that and do a whole circuit. So, yeah.
That's crazy quick.
Crazy quick, yeah. And I think it was a little bit of a shock to me. Like, I was expecting to be competing in NORAMs for 3-4 years at least and didn't really think much of the next step and was still kind of getting used to the courses of NORAMs and stuff. So that jump up to the national team was huge for me. Like it definitely was a point where I struggled a bit to kind of find myself in skiing and get used to bigger courses and how to actually learn like the flow of skiing rather than just the tricks themselves.
Yeah, because there's so much going on in there where inside of 2 years, you get from your first competitions to like international level competitions with big expectations that if you do well, it's the Olympics, it's you know, being pro. There's what you just mentioned that you go from local competitions, which are smaller features, smaller jumps, all of that to big ass courses where, you know,
totally.
You got to be on point because if you mess up on a big jump, then, you know, it can, you can get injured. Like it's real consequences. How was that, all of that for you, like that quick transition? That's crazy.
Yeah, the quick transition was like crazy for me. Like I was so excited about it. So it was something that I really like leaned into because I was like, I'm really excited about the sport. Like this is fresh and new. And like, I want to push myself and do as much as I can. But definitely there was a part of me that was like really scared. I remember going to like my first training camp and it was in Mammoth, and also just showing up and like all of a sudden you are with all these people who have already competed in X Games in the Olympics, and they're wearing Red Bull helmets, and they're like, you know, they're super well established in the sport, and you're kind of like, wow, like I'm just starting, like I'm kind of nervous again. It's almost that like initial fear of like progressing in front of people who are better than you, like you get nervous. Yeah,
going back to what we said, going back to what we said about like your first times in the park.
Totally. Like you relive that 100% because you feel like these people have so much more experience than you. And when they see you ski, they're going to be like, oh my God, like, do you deserve to be here? So there's definitely that aspect that was scary. And then on top of that, just learning to do the tricks that you already had, but on a bigger course. So I was like, okay, yeah, like I can ski switch. Like that's fine. I've hit some jumps. I've done some switch fives, switch sevens. But when you're going switch into a jump that's twice the size, it's scary because you know that if you mess up, it's going to hurt a lot more. So trying to get over that fear and just get used to doing the bag of tricks that I already had, but on a more technical course. And that's harder than people appreciate, I think.
And there's a big thing to say about, let's say your biggest trick was a switch sev.
Yeah.
The way you set a switch sev.
Oh, yeah.
On a small jump, if you set it the same, you're going for a 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to adapt.
100%. And that's something that definitely was huge for me. Like I remember I could do cork sevens, but I was used to doing cork sevens on like, honestly, like a 15, 20 foot jump, like small
jump.
Just
all like,
the, yeah, 100%. And then all of a sudden you have to do on a jump that's four times the air time. And you're trying to learn how to like slow down your rotation, be patient, like stand up taller, all this stuff. And it's hard to like retrain your brain to do tricks, the same trick, but honestly completely different because the tempo, like the way you set it, everything, it's just so different.
And how did you go about it? Was it just like taking your time and adapting?
Yeah, like just taking my time and kind of trying to slowly work into it. Like I remember the coaches were really good. I did some stuff on airbag and water amps that year, which helped because I kind of got introduced to the more airtime aspect. And then just, yeah, not trying to learn new tricks, but just taking a year to like get comfortable riding. And just like, I did so many camps where I would just go and like straight air the jump line and do 360s and like just really get comfortable like with the flow of jumps and spinning and stuff. So not trying to like initially push myself to like do a double, you know, it was definitely like warming into it.
But I guess that's important. Like,
for sure.
In a sense of being safe and not injure yourself, it's always best to like take your time, being sure you're all good before you want to try it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And for me, like that was the biggest aspect. I know that when I came up onto the national team, my previous coach was a little bit nervous for me, and rightfully so. Like looking back, I am like, I don't know how I didn't get injured the first year because I'm a pretty small girl. Like I'm like 5'2". Never been in the gym before when I started with the team, you know, so I wasn't really aware of like the physical aspects of it and like how I needed to be like a lot stronger and all this. So just trying to get used to that as well. Like I really didn't want to get injured the first year. So just trying to like trust my coaches and be like, okay, it's not time to like push myself to do new tricks yet. I need to like spend some time in the gym and make sure I'm stronger and make sure I have better edge control and all this before I'm actually starting to do bigger tricks that will be a lot of risk.
Yeah, you're right. Cause then it's a whole strategic way of thought where strategic in a sense of your career, but also that knee injuries can happen really fast and stupidly, like in odd situations. Like some people just blow their knees on a 360 that they land awkwardly.
Yeah.
And you've been good up to now, right? Injury wise?
Yeah, I've been pretty good up to now injury wise. I've had some like smaller injuries, but nothing substantial like an ACL. And it's hard because you also see a lot of really good athletes who are really young and are doing so well in the circuit. And then they go through an ACL recovery, and that is really hard on an athlete because you're cut back a year, but also you've got a little bit less confidence because you're probably feeling a little bit scared and worried about what injury will look like in the future and all this. So
yeah,
trying to stay away from that is also a big part of the game, because if you're going at a progressing at a slower pace, but you don't have any interruptions, then you have a lot more room to grow. It's just hard.
Was there a lot of maximize involved? Like, what was it for you that helped you progress? Was it like sessions at Mammoth, like you said, or water ramps or maximize?
Yeah, so I didn't do a ton of maximize until the last couple of years, but I would say that's been a huge part of my progression in the last 2 years. Like, we've spent a ton of time in there in the summer, and that's definitely helped me gain confidence, especially with doubles and getting into that space where you're flipping more than once. It's mm-hmm. it's really nice to be able to do that stuff on an airbag before you go to snow. But honestly, just the constant repetition is really what I find helps. So I've had some times where I've gone to maximize and I was really struggling with like a right cork nine, and I would go to maximize and I would go for honestly only even an hour a day, because laps are so quick. It's like 10 second laps. And I would do like 30 right cork nines in a row. And you just become so confident with that trick because you do it so many times within a small chunk of time that your brain is kind of like wired, like, okay, I can do this. I know what the motion is. I know where I am in the air. So definitely just like getting more repetition. So everywhere I go, it's like, okay, if there's something I need to work on, I'm going to do it as many times as I can.
And now it's time for another sponsor break. The season is here and Planks Clothing is there for you. Planks is a movement of humans creating change through skiing. Skiing is a mind-altering experience. The mountains bring together a community of obsessive riders, roamers, and revelers. Their vision is to build this global community all bound by shared vibes and hooked on riding. Drop 1 and 2 of their 22-23 collection is now online at planksclothing.com. This collection celebrates Manchester, Planks' second home, its people, and its influence on the gear they make. Proper good gear that'll stand up on the harshest mountain conditions and everything else the universe throws at you. Check them out at planksclothing.com. Support companies that support skiing. Support Planks Clothing. Yeah, that's a great point that I think people who've never been to Maximize might not realize, but
yeah,
that's one advantage. That's crazy because Maximize is basically one hit if you're hitting the jumps. It's one hit and it's a rope toe. So whereas in a normal resort, you hit a certain jump every 10 to 15 minutes if you're lapping, then yeah, now in the same 15 minutes, you get 30 hits. Like, it's totally crazy quick.
And the best part I find about Maximize is that you're not as weather dependent, because sometimes we'll go to, let's say, Switzerland and have a training camp and you'll have like 7 days of bad weather. But Maximize, all you need in a day is like 45 minutes to an hour. Like, we would rarely ever do a full day at Maximize. So if the weather's bad in the morning, it's like, okay, whatever, we'll just wait. And then you have an hour window where it's sunny and you can do everything you need to do. So it's a lot easier to get training in, because sometimes it's hard if you're just waiting at a resort for the weather to get better.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like that in the bigger mountains. Like, I remember same thing being in Whistler at some point, and it's raining for 7 days and you're just not doing anything.
Even if you get an hour window, it's like, okay, well, maybe in an hour I can do two laps, so I'm not going to be able to work into my big tricks anyways.
Yeah.
So it's definitely advantageous in that sense.
But the only thing that I found, and that's the life of rope toes, but it's kind of intense, the rope toe. Like, it's tiring.
Yeah, my team always jokes that, especially in the summer, that Maximize is the most like physically demanding camp. We're all like neck whiplash, like back so sore, because you're just walking up on a rope toe and then like getting whiplash on the airbag. So it's a lot on the body.
So we talked a bit that you went from, you know, first competitions to Team Canada inside mm-hmm. of 2 years, which is crazy. And you were talking a bit about being impressed by like people that were already pro on the team with their Red Bull helmets and all of that. But now we're a couple years later and you have your Monster hat on and you're one of those people now. How did that go, that transition? Like, it's been 4 years now, and going from new to the team, no experience on the big courses, all that we said, to now 5X Games medals, Olympics, FIS Crystal Globe at your first year. Maybe we can touch on that first. Your first season ever in the World Cup, you get the Crystal Globe, which is the number one overall in points for all the season. So not necessarily that you won all the competitions, but with all the results compiled, you're the one who had the best season. That's intense of a statement in inside the competition circuit to make a bang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was insane for me. That wasn't something that was even in my mind until, like, not even the last competition. So I had kind of started out that year and done the first couple World Cups as my warm-up, just getting used to the scene. Didn't make finals. It was just kind of like getting used to it, doing some smaller tricks on the course. And then I remember it was in Italy when I got my first podium and I did a run and I was like, wow, like this is awesome. Like I'm so stoked. Am I riding this at this competition? And then I went almost straight to Mammoth and then again came up with a really good run and somehow ended up landing it and was on the podium. So I already had two World Cup podiums that year. Didn't think anything of it, went into like the last competition, just doing my thing. And then I remember I landed my run and I was super happy and I was at the bottom. And one of the like FIS regulators, he was there and he's like, I think you might've won the like Crystal Globe. And I was like, no, like you're joking.
Like you weren't even keeping track of it?
No, I had no idea. And the craziest part is that I won by 1 point.
Oh,
one
shit.
Single point.
In front of who?
In front of Sarah Hoffman.
Shit. Damn.
Yeah. So it was crazy. And the funniest thing is that she told me that when I went up on the podium, she's like, the same thing happened to me 2 years ago. She said that she beat somebody by 1 point as well, which is like so like coincidental because she has to become like exactly, let's say, sixth spot and I have to become exactly first spot.
Mm.
So it's crazy that that happened. And it wasn't even in my mind until he said that. And I was like, no, there's no way that that's true. And then after my coaches came up to me and they're like, yeah, I think you did it. I'm like, okay, wow.
Yeah, 2019, you ended the season with 281 points. So on that scale, 1 point difference is really like minimal.
Yeah. Oh, so minimal. Yeah. Yeah.
That's dope. So, but you were saying that with every podium, you didn't think much of it. But I'm curious, like, how did you not think much of it? Because you're coming from Ontario again. And I focus on that maybe, but there's a lot of people that have come from Ontario. There's Dave Crichton, there's Corey Vanuler, there's Evan McEachran. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people, but still, when we grow up, as you said, we're not in Austria or Switzerland. It's not necessarily the skiing vibe. And then you're getting podiums on the World Cups.
Yeah. I think for me, like my mentality going into that season was just like, I didn't feel like I needed to ski well. I was more focused on like just trying to prove that I was meant to be there. I didn't want to like finish the season and be like, oh, I feel like people are kind of like, oh, Megan shouldn't really be on the World Cup circuit yet. So like, I kind of just came in as an underdog and I was like, I just want to do my best and land runs. I don't necessarily need to do the hardest tricks ever, but I just want to land runs that with tricks that I'm confident in and prove that like I'm meant to be here and like I want to be part of this circuit and all that. So I think just because I was so focused on just doing my own thing and not necessarily getting results, but just skiing and doing what I could, that it kind of just came into play.
Yeah. But well, that's cool to hear. It's like sometimes you hear people that get stressed out in those settings where they expect a lot of themselves results wise. And it's as if you did the opposite where it was just like, I'm not thinking about the results. I just want to do my thing. And then that ended up being the best thing you could have done.
And I think that's a huge part of skiing is like people forget that there's a lot of like pressure that comes with being an athlete. And it's really hard to keep control over that. So like the mental aspect of the sport is almost just as big as the physical part. So if you can kind of get to that space where you're like, I'm just here skiing for fun and like this is what I do and I love it and like I'm just gonna do what I can, then a lot of times it almost ends up working out better than if you're like, okay, I need to land my run or else, like, you know.
And it's something that I think is a great way to go on to maybe talk about X Games, mm-hmm. is that X Games is the biggest stage there is in skiing.
Mm-hmm.
You're still really young and you got 5 medals. So I guess you're kind of thriving off of that. How's X Games for you? How has it been? Because you've been first X Games in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had 3 X Games season and you already have 5 medals. That's a... Yeah. That's a great ratio.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, coming into X Games, I definitely was really nervous. And again, like wanting to prove myself and make sure that like I felt like I deserved to be there. So I remember showing up, I was really nervous and like, again, really big course. But I kind of just tried to do my own thing, ski, not take it too seriously. And the first one was kind of just like a warm up. I remember I did big air and slope, and I think I was like 6th in big air or something like that. And after that, like coming back to X Games again, it's so different than the World Cup circuit because it's such a different environment because it almost feels back to like the roots of just skiing at your home club because there's music playing, you have 3 hours, you take sled laps up, and you just ski. It doesn't feel like really stressful, which I like because it's just such a like fun atmosphere. People are here to watch, everybody's down at the bottom, like drinking and enjoying themselves and hanging out with family and friends. So it's just like way more laid back than a World Cup competition, which I really like. And I think that kind of played into how I felt in the competition and ultimately like how I've done at X Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a lot of attention that is fun, but that can also be stressful. Like, let's say in X Games, you have a lot of people attending the actual event that you mm-hmm. maybe don't see in World Cups.
Totally.
I'm not sure, maybe you tell me. But then there's also the fact that like you have the big TV presence that
yeah.
that can be stressful, I guess.
It can be stressful, and somehow like it really shouldn't be that different, but it feels a lot different to me. I think just because like in a World Cup, you're at the start gate and it's like, okay, like Megan dropping in like 3, 2, 1, like it's so like so much more of an atmosphere where you become nervous. Whereas X Game, it's like, okay, we're doing a jam format. You're the first one up. Like mm-hmm. you can drop when you want and there's music playing and there's people at the bottom and there's lights going. So it's like, I don't feel like it's quite as serious. It's not quiet and everybody's like looking at you. It's like everybody's having a good time and I'm just hitting a big jump and people are watching. So I think that's really nice.
I guess X Games really found the right formula because I think that's something that every rider would say
mm-hmm.
that everyone enjoys that vibe. Everyone thrives off of that or not necessarily thrives, but that's what's enjoyed the most by the athletes.
Yeah.
But you mentioned you got 6th at your first X Games.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's you brushed it off quickly. Like, yeah, I got 6th, but that's some people like, you know, for a lot of people, that's an insanely great result.
A huge accomplishment. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it is for sure. And honestly, at that point, I remember just being like, I am over the moon just to be here and to have gotten an invite. So like, I just have to be stoked on that and just enjoy the experience because I may not get invited again. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Did you ever have a point in there where you were kind of like taking a break and kind of updating the software in your head of like, because you go from the local scene to the national level comes to the international level to X Games and it happens really fast. Sometimes you don't even realize that you're making all that getting that far, you know?
Yeah. Making that much progress. Yeah. Like definitely there was times when I would look back and be like definitely after my first season, I remember being like, wow, like I don't feel like I've done all that. Like that's
yeah.
crazy. Like I'm really happy with myself, but wow, it really doesn't feel like that's happened. Just crazy.
And how did that thinking go? Was there a process of like saying, okay, well, I guess like, I don't know, like looking backwards and then looking forward again, seeing the progress you made?
Yeah, like it's super cool to look back. But I think the thing is that like whenever things happen to you as a person, they don't feel as real as when you like see them happen to other people. Like, for instance, like I think famous people like singers and stuff will always say like, hey, I'm just a normal person. Like I do normal things and this just happened to me.
Yeah.
And people are always like, oh, that's crazy. Like you're a superstar. You're so famous. But really, like, when you're living it, it's just like, it doesn't really feel like it's that different. Like, I just feel like I've been skiing for a long time and it's been fun and a lot of cool things have happened in my career, but it doesn't really feel all that serious. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good. That means you're keeping a level head.
Yeah.
Because it's a weird thing with our sport that is not mainstream, where mm-hmm. you're kind of doing your thing in your corner all season long. And then when there's the Olympics now, for like 2 weeks, you're a superstar for the media.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like those two sides.
Different.
How has that been for you, talking about like a stardom, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
maybe on the broader mainstream side, and also like maybe going to Ontario and like having kids look up to you now?
Yeah, that's been super weird for me. Like, it's definitely been an adjustment. I think, like, for me, I don't really believe it as much in my own head. So when people come up and approach me and are like, hey, can I get a photo? Or like, will you sign this? I'm like, me? Like, what? Why? And then I kind of like look back and I'm like, okay, yeah, like, I guess so for sure. And definitely the Olympics was a big adjustment for me. It was, I've never experienced something like that. And for sure, it's a totally different realm, because for us, like, World Cups are something that are broadcasted, but a lot of times at the competitions in Europe, you won't even see it in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So the audience is a lot smaller. And going to the Olympics, like, I remember being a little bit overwhelmed, because all of a sudden, every day, I wake up to like 200 messages on my phone, like from Instagram, from emails, from text messages of people that I've met and maybe necessarily don't even know that well, that are messaging and saying like, hey, good luck, or like, so proud of you. So to have that sort of support behind you was a really big adjustment, because it definitely did feel like a lot more eyes were on you, a lot more pressure was on you, and all of a sudden you feel like you need to perform, which was different for sure.
Was it adding pressure or adding kind of, was it helping you or kind of putting weight on your back?
Definitely like a bit of both. For sure, I was happy to have all the support and like from friends and family and people I was really close with. It was awesome to see that. And I think I tried my best throughout the whole experience to try and not pay too much attention to all the messages I was getting and media that was around me, and kind of just focus on like skiing at its core. But for sure, like, I felt by the end of the experience, like Olympic experience, it was a little bit like exhausting and a little bit overwhelming, because you're like, wow, I'm just here to do like one thing. And I feel like I have all these people that are expecting me to do well.
And there's really that, I don't know how it is in the other countries, but I feel like in Canada, we're really focused on, you hear them a lot in the broadcasts, they're calculating the amount of medals we're expecting.
Totally. Yeah.
And they're really not shy about it. They'll say like, so mm-hmm. Megan Oldham is a contender for a gold medal here and here. And like, they're really kind of putting pressure on you guys, saying like, if Mick Kingsbury doesn't win.
Oh, totally.
It's a loss. And if Megan doesn't get a podium, you know.
And for me, I think the one hard part that I experienced was, I went into Big Air and I did the tricks that I wanted to do for qualifiers as kind of like a warm up for my finals. And I ended up qualifying first. And I was honestly kind of like, oh shoot, I did not want that, because all of a sudden it's like Megan Oldham's qualified first for the Olympics, like most likely to win Big Air. And everybody's like, oh, if she's first in qualifiers, then like it means she's probably going to be first in Big Air, like in the finals.
Yeah, and that's not how it works.
It's not the case at all. So I'm like, okay, like, you guys have to understand that, like, even though I did those tricks, the girls in the competition who did smaller tricks did that strategically so that they get into finals, because they don't want to fall and not make finals. So I'm like, there's going to be a lot bigger tricks, but people don't necessarily understand that because they aren't as close with the sport. So I felt like there's a lot of pressure, like, okay, because she's first in qualifiers, she's got a podium in finals. And that was definitely a big thing, because I was like, okay, nobody really understands the real situation. And like, I don't expect that for myself. So
yeah. And yeah, with mainstream media, they're still posting articles with photos of people not grabbing, or like, so you start from far, like in that whole sense.
Mm-hmm. That was the funniest thing for me. I remember I finished the Olympics and I made like a little post on my Instagram just kind of like being sarcastic, like, oh, what great photos they got at the Olympics. And it was like me crashing, me missing a grab like 10 times. And you would not believe how many people like responded and being like, wow, beautiful jump. Like, it looks amazing. And I'm like, oh no, like nobody knows anything about our sport if they think that that's a good photo. Yeah.
We got to live with that, I guess.
Yeah. And it's coming along. Like, people are learning, but it's a slow process for sure.
What was your tricks for qualies? What did you do to end up first?
So for qualies, I did switch dub 9 was my trick, because it was only 2 jumps and you do the best of 1.
And then for finals, you ended up 4th, which is a great result. At Olympics, it's always like the one that comes in interviews, like, oh, you ended up 4th, you're this, like, how it's was it for you? Yeah,
it was good. It's definitely a bittersweet position for sure. But like the best part for me is like I left the competition being like I did the hardest tricks that I can possibly do. So I did switch dub 10 in my finals and dub 12. And I had never done the switch dub 12, dub 10 before. That was the first time I've ever done it. So for me, I was like, I basically did a new trick. There was nothing else I could have possibly done. Like, I don't have any more doubles that are more difficult. I landed it the best I could. I had the best grab I could. So like, I'm happy with that because I feel like I put it all out there. It's still hard for sure to be in that 4th position because you're like, I'm so close. Mm-hmm. But I was happy leaving because I was like, I've done everything I can. There wasn't any more I could put out there. So
yeah, well, I guess that's a great thing to know, leaving to feel good, because let's say you would have landed a not so good dub 12 or not so good switch dub, then you're like, if only I had landed it well, then maybe. And then you're like, but now you can leave. Like, and because the girls on the podium killed it. Like, it's not as if.
That was the thing too. Like, it was so well deserved for the people who were on the podium that it was like, respect. Like, you beat me fair and square. Like, your tricks were sick. You deserve that. And that's the best feeling. Nobody likes to like be on the podium feeling like, oh, like I could have done better, or like I didn't really do my best. So I was happy.
So Eileen won, and then it was Tess Leder in 2nd, and Mathilde Grémaud in 3rd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember, what was it? Eileen did a dub 14, dub 16.
She did dub 14, and everybody was like, okay, that's it. Like, that's her max. She can do the other way, dub 10 or dub 12, but that's it. And then she, out of blue, just did a 16 to the other direction. Yeah.
To close off the comp, right?
Like, to close off the comp. Like,
yeah, that's crazy.
I think we all were kind of in disbelief too. Like, I remember I actually watched her do the 16 and I was like, oh, cool. But like, why would she do the 16 when she just did the 14? Like, that's only, it's not really going to jump her up anymore. And then I was like, wow. I kind of had a moment of realization, like, no, she did it the other way. Oh my gosh. So that was cool to watch.
And there's a, that must be crazy, because you got, you girls ski with each other all year round. So you really know what everyone can do or will do approximately. It's a matter of execution and the details, but you know that girls, like, did you know, let's say that Tess was going to do a switch 14, like, did you know she had that in the bag?
No. So that was the crazy thing, is that at the Olympics, it was almost the opposite. Like, you're used to kind of knowing what tricks people are going to pull out. And at the Olympics, it was like people were trying new stuff. People were trying stuff I've never seen before. Like, there was one girl who, she didn't make finals, but she did the first ever switch dub bio, and she did it in practice. And we were all like, that did not just happen. Like, nobody knew she'd be working on this trick, like, just all of a sudden. And then I remember Yo-Yo did her first, I think she did switch 14 in practice, and she was trying it in the comp as well. Like, so everybody was just trying new stuff and putting it all out on the line.
And who was the girl who did the switched up bio?
Her name's Lara Wolf.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And everybody was so excited. That was the coolest part. Like, it's the biggest competition of our careers, and everybody's at the top, like, clapping and screaming and yelling because they're so excited that she did something new.
Yeah, that was cool to see the camaraderie, as we said before. The image I have in mind is like the boys' podium in Big Air, where like it's 3 different countries, and but they were all like bros, just hugging and being stoked for each other.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Question for you, strategic question. You got fourth with Switch Dub 10, you said, and Dub 12.
Yeah.
And I know that you got a podium just before that at X Games with Dub 12 and Ride Dub 12.
Yeah.
What was the thinking of going for Switch Dub 10 and not Ride Dub 12?
So that was actually something that I had talked about a lot with my coaches, especially the night before. It was like, which one do I do, the 10 or the 12? Like, what's going to score more?
You're guessing.
You're guessing. And the problem is with my right 12, that like X Games was the first time I've ever done it. It was kind of like a spur of the moment. Like, I feel like I'm riding really well and this jump is perfect. Like, for some reason, I just feel like I can do it. And the time that I landed in X Games was the only time I've ever landed it. So it's like, I've landed this trick once, but I've landed a Switch Dub 9 probably 40 times, and it's only an extra 180. So for me, it was just more about being consistent. And at that time, too, I didn't know what other people were going to be doing. So it was like, okay, it probably makes more sense for me to do two tricks that I know I can land and just hope for the best. And also, like, looking back at the scores, like, I think my Dub 12 was only, like, 2 or 3 points higher than my Switch Dub 10. So even if I did it perfect to the right, it wouldn't have been enough points to close the gap between me and Mathilde.
And it's cool that you say that, because I just did an episode with Henrik, and he mentioned the same exact thing in terms of strategy for his big error, where it was like, I'm going to try and phrase it correctly, but I think he was saying focusing more on perfection rather than progression. Saying like, he's going to do the nose butt triple that he knows how to do and he can do perfectly, rather than like going for broke on something he's not sure.
Yeah.
Trying to do.
And totally. And then you also have the thought in your head of like, well, if I don't land my right Dub 12, then I'm also going to have these thoughts of like, what if I did land? Like, what if they liked it better? Like, where would I have ranked? So it was just for me, like, I want to do a trick I know I'm going to land, and we'll see how they react to it.
Yeah. I guess there's a lot of overthinking that can go into it as we're talking about it now. Of what if I did that other trick? What if? How do you handle that? Those choices.
So much. It's hard for sure, but like ultimately, you kind of just have to be like, it is what it is at the end of the day. Like for me in slopestyle, I was the one person off from making the final, and for me, like, it was a really tough situation, because I remember I fell on my first run. And my coaches and I were talking, and I was like, should I do the back six or should I do a back two on the rail? And they're like, you need to land a run, otherwise you're not going to make it. So the risk is like, do I do a back six or back two? And for me, I was like, I kind of want to do the back six. Like, I feel comfortable with it. Like, if I miss a grab, then that's it. I'm out of finals. And it's kind of funny, because that's actually what ended up happening. I did the back two, and then I missed my grab on the last jump a little bit. And so I have those thoughts in my head when I finish, like, if I only did the back six, I probably would have made it. But that's life, and it happens to everybody. So you kind of just had to be like, you know what, it is what it is. And that's, can't overthink.
Regarding those thoughts of back two, back six, being strategic, do you think there was more thought brought into that because it was the Olympics? Like, do you have those same kind of conversation X Games wise, let's say?
I mean, you for sure do, but it seems heightened for sure at the Olympics, because it's really like, we're strictly trying to get results rather than like I've gone to World Cups where it's like, I don't even really care how much I compete. I just want to do like back-to-back doubles as I've done it factor kind of thing, so I can put it into other competitions.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's different for sure.
Because like, I've seen you, there's a post on Instagram from this summer where you do a line and you end up with a back six as if it's nothing. So it's a trick that you have, right?
Yeah.
In your bag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. Like, there's always so much to think about, because then I could have done the back six and then fallen. And then I would have been thinking, shoot, I should have listened to my coaches. Like, I'm so mad at myself. Like,
yeah.
I would have made the finals if I just did a back two. So there's always the other side. Like, you can never know.
Because I guess for a lot of people, it doesn't seem really strategic.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at slopestyle, it seems like people are doing their best, but there's a lot going on, knowing what the other riders can and will do. There's something going on about the course that day, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there the light or the speed or the wind or whatever? Then there's yourself, like, knowing the risk of there's a big trick that you can do, but you don't know if you'll land it. There's a smaller trick. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on into the actual run we're seeing.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that we don't really have that much room for error. Like in the big air final, it's you have three jumps and you have to land two count. Mm. So that means you can mess up once. And it's so easy to miss a grab or not hold it quite long enough or land and be like a little bit wobbly. So it's like you don't have any room for error. You need to do tricks that you are going to land.
Yeah. Yeah. Henrik told me that his plan was switched up bio 18, mm-hmm. then nose butt triple. And mm-hmm. once those two are good, then he tries a big trick that he had never done.
Yeah.
But what happened is he didn't land his nose butt triple well. So when he went into his last jump, so he was like, do I go for the trick I've never done or do I try and do the nose butt triple better? Mm-hmm. That's where was there something like that for you?
I feel like that happens to me a lot. Like, even in my big air final, I did the switched up 10 the first run. And I remember I landed like kind of high up. Like, I think I was like first line. And so again, after I did my dub 12, I went back and I was like, well, I have one more jump. I might as well just try the switch dub 10 again and make it bigger and make it cleaner because I'm probably going to get more points than trying something else random.
And how was the slope style? You mentioned you were one spot out of finals, but how was that that whole experience in general? Because what I learned is that, again, in the behind the scenes, there's a lot of stuff going on. Whereas, let's say you have the big air comp and then the slope style is 4-hour drive away and there's a lot of behind the scenes going on in between events. How was the whole event for you?
Mm-hmm. There's so much behind the scenes stuff that people don't understand or never see. And you're for sure right. Like the Olympic experience for us was the most draining physically because for us, it was like we show up, we have time to acclimatize, but then we go into big air. And for us, the venue was like an hour away and our training was in the morning. So for probably a week straight, we were getting up at around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to get dressed, have breakfast, get on the bus in order to get there in time for training. So you're already exhausted because you're getting up early and then you're thinking about competing, you're receiving all these messages, having to respond to that. And then right after Big Air finished, the girls had one day off, the boys had no days off, and we go straight to the other venue, which like you say is like 4 hours away, and then straight into another like 3 days of training and then straight into 2 more days of competing. So honestly, it was like 2 weeks straight of like full on skiing. And I think it's unfortunate that they structured it that way because it resulted in a lot of people getting injured. I think there was maybe 4 girls just during the Olympics that left with ACL. And that's sad to see because it probably is a lot to do with fatigue and over skiing, all that sort of stuff.
And
so
were they all in big air or slope?
There was some in big air. So there was, I think, one girl in big air and then 2 US girls did theirs in slope. And then there was one other Japanese girl who did hers. I can't remember when. Yeah. So that part was frustrating for us as athletes because we're like, obviously we're all physically drained and like we probably shouldn't be doing this much volume of skiing, but we have to push ourselves because this is the Olympics.
And I guess that comes into your mind also, knowing that mm-hmm. you want to get the results, but you also don't want to get injured and you see them like you're living with them almost, like you see them every day and you're aware of what's happening. And plus you've had a rough go, I guess we can say, for the Canadian team, where one of the girls blew her knee mm-hmm. and Olivia pulled out due to personal reasons. So mm-hmm. you're kind of dealing with that also on your personal end. Like you saw all of that.
Yeah, for sure. No, and it's hard to see that. And also people see it and they suspect like, okay, like Megan and her team, they go in the morning and they train for 2 hours and then they're done for the day and that's all they do. But the Olympics is such a big focus for countries that for us, it's like you wake up, you go do like your warm up for 35, 40 minutes. Then you go do your training. Then you finish training. Then you go and see the physio and you get treatment. Then you go see the massage lady. Then you have dinner and then you go and do your cool down. And by then the entire day is over. So it's like, you don't really have all that much time to yourself where you're just slowing down and kind of like detaching from the Olympic scene. It's like everything goes into this one competition.
Yeah. And how much media is involved? Is it all after the comp or do you also have like obligations beforehand?
It depends like person to person. I think like some of the bigger athletes obviously have a lot more media that they have to do. I think because of COVID, it was a little bit smaller this year, which is good. So for us, like I had media stuff after training. There would usually be people there asking us questions after qualifiers, finals, for both events. And then I remember there was once where I actually had to go on one of the afternoons to like the media station and go do like a separate interview. Yeah.
And how was that for you? In the sense of being in free skiing where we're in our own bubble, own little sport, and that, then you're on CBC or whatever it is.
That it was cool for sure. Like it was definitely a different aspect of the sport that I've never really experienced. And like going to a media facility and actually like sitting down and getting mic'd up and like seeing everything is a cool experience for sure. Like I enjoyed it. But again, like you say, it like adds a lot of external pressure to you that isn't necessarily what you want.
All in all, when you look back at the experience, how do you assess it now? Like, let's say we're in the fall, it's been over 6 months. Are you stoked on it? How are you looking back and maybe looking forward to Cortina? Because you're young, so I guess that's really a next big thing.
Yeah, like looking back, like even right when I left, it was like, okay, this was such an incredible experience. And I just had to be grateful because not that many people will get to experience this in their lifetime. So I enjoyed every second of it, even though it was stressful. Like it was such a cool thing to be part of. And I'm really looking forward to the next 4 years because I feel like there's a lot that I can learn in 4 years and a lot that I want to show at the next games. So I'm really excited and looking forward to it.
And you're in at a great age because Olympics being every 4 year, not everyone goes at the same age, kind of.
Totally.
And being 21, were you 20 at that Olympics?
Yes, I would have been 20.
Yeah. So next up, you'll be 24 and then... Like that's great timing. When you look at people these days, like Henrik got a medal, and yes, Henrik is special and he's a GOAT, but he got a medal at 30. So there's room to have chances and to, you know, look, not have the pressure of saying like, I need to perform at 20 or else I'm done, you know?
Yeah. And that's comforting too, knowing like it's cool to be like, okay, well, I have lots of time and I do kind of get a second chance to like show my abilities and see what I can do.
Yeah. And Italy should be nice.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Italy. It'd be a cool place to go for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure we want to get into that because I guess it's been talked about, but because with China, you had the whole, not only the pressure and the intense days and the media, but it was also like COVID season. So
yeah.
Stress about that?
Yeah, honestly, I think like the month leading up to the Olympics was the most stressed I've been in my entire life because they had kind of said to us, our federation, like, if you get COVID 2 weeks before the games, that's it, you're not going. It doesn't matter if you're qualified or not, you can't go. And then within that mix, it was like, okay, X Games is in that time frame. So you get an invite for X Games and you're like, do I turn down X Games because I'm risking maybe getting COVID because I'm going to be in huge crowds? Or do I still go to X Games and just pray that I don't get COVID and can still go to the Olympics? And that was such a hard decision. Like my entire team was really struggling to decide if we should go or not.
But I guess it ended up being a good decision looking back. Two medals.
It did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were all like, back. It was worth it for sure.
Yeah. And, but yeah, it was kind of an odd X Games about that because people canceled due to COVID, you know, only like positive tests. And then there were a lot of people there riding with masks on, like the N95s. Yeah. Everyone was like, I'm not catching COVID.
Yeah. And that was us because our federation had kind of said to us, like, we don't think you should go to X Games. So, like, if you go and you get COVID, you know, you can't go. So we're all like, we are never taking off our masks. Like, we can't get it.
Damn, that's a lot of pressure. When mm-hmm. even the Federation is like, we think you should not go.
And yeah. And it's something that you can't control. It's like, I could stay home for those 2 weeks and I could still get COVID. Mm-hmm. Or I could go and I could get COVID. So it's like, it's not something that you can control. And then if it does happen, it's like, you're definitely going to have those thoughts and wonders of like, oh my gosh, what if, or, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you really had an insane season looking back at it. You had 2X Games medals, the Olympics, even though you didn't get a podium, still great, you know, accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Then you went to the Nines event in the spring.
Yep.
How was that? Because it's an event that's been going on for, I'd say, over 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that really has evolved and developed into something special. But it's something that I'd say from the public's end is kind of a, not cryptic, but we don't see much. We see highlight videos on the internet, but it seems like we don't see much details around it. Like, how was it for you? Maybe tell us about the event. Like, how is it? Because we see big features. We see the dream setup, but how is it? It's a week long riding with a bunch of fellow pros and you're just like chilling?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. That was my first time going and I didn't really know what to expect. But after I went, I would say it's probably my favorite event I've ever been to, because that's exactly what it is. It's like it seems like, because people are putting it on like a company and stuff, that mm-hmm. there has to be some sort of like ulterior motive for them to do it. But it's not. The entire event is just based around inviting the best skiers and snowboarders so that they can have a good time, enjoy their sport, and get content. So that's exactly what it's about. Like, we did dinners every night. We went, they took us surfing at like this wave pool, which was so cool. We had like welcome nights and like awards. Like, they just did such a good job of like creating activities for us to do and kind of just bond with each other, get to know everybody, and then put together the most insane course that they can, and then just give you access to GoPros, to cool like drone features and all this, and just say like, go play, which was so cool. Like, I had amazing time.
That's intense, because not intense, but that's insane, I'd say. Because mm-hmm. especially for your generation, where there's less events like that are done independently. You do mostly like FIS events, where it's mm-hmm. the opposite. It's regulated. You have your runs. There's a clear goal, which is get a podium. And then you get to do that event. Must be nice to have that free freedom of, you know, just enjoy yourself. We'll get some nice content mm-hmm. and enjoy.
And the best part is there's no pressure with it. Like, I remember there was a couple of days where it was bad weather, and it's like, hey, if you don't want to go up, don't go up. Like, you don't have to ski. You don't have to do anything. Like, if you want to go up and ski all day long, go for it. If you want to just chill this entire week and not ski at all, that's totally fine. So it was cool not to have any pressure and just be like, I just get to go ski and do my own thing and hang out with friends and do different tricks, and they're going to film it for us.
You have a post on your Instagram of a Switch Dub 9.
Yeah.
On a jump that looks humongous. How big do you think those jumps were? Like, close to 100 feet, certainly?
Yeah, I would say probably about 80. It's 80? Definitely a big jump. It's okay. Close. I would say it was about the X Games big air jump.
Okay, so it's not out of what you're used to. It was big air type of jump.
Yeah, it was definitely on the bigger end of jumps that I've hit. But they also just do such a good job with the jump, like shaping and everything, that it feels way smaller than it is because it's so smooth.
What was your thought on the bottom section? They always do kind of a creative build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This year there was kind of a ball jump mm-hmm. with a ball in the middle that you could go into from any angle that you wanted to.
Yep.
And you saw some crazy stuff, I think, from maybe Max Moffat, maybe from Jesper Chatter. How was it handling that, knowing that there's no pressure of a run? It's just like figuring it out during the week.
Yeah, that was super cool to watch all of that too. it definitely was like a different aspect for me too, because I feel like I've done a lot more of the like comp style skiing. So to just see other people hitting creative features and doing stuff was really neat to see, and definitely like wanted, like made me want to push myself to kind of do more of that. And it also brings back the initial like jitters that sometimes you don't get anymore because you've done stuff so often. So like seeing a feature you've never hit and like all these crazy ways you can hit it, it's like, oh, I'm a little nervous. And like you get that like jitters from pushing yourself to do stuff again. So it was really cool to see.
And then another thing that I want to touch on is Colleen Balebaz. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly. Colleen is dropping an all-girl movie this fall, and I saw that you were a part of that. How was that for, again, repeating myself, but someone who's a lot into competitions, getting into a format of filming, and that movie looks dope.
Yeah, I was so excited when I heard about it. It was more of like a last-minute thing. I kind of finished the season, and they were doing a park shoot for a bunch of the girls to add into the movie, and they just invited a bunch of other girls. So they invited me and Olivia. So we kind of just decided last minute, we're like, oh, well, we'll just stay after our last competition and go and do this. And it was also really fun because it was just such a different atmosphere for skiing. Like, it kind of felt like Kimbo session vibes. Like, we would go up in the morning, they'd have lunch for us, you would just ski, there's people there with filming equipment, and you do whatever you want on the jumps and the rails, and they'd follow you. And again, it's no pressure, which is so different from the comp stuff, because it's always like, I have this limited amount of time, I need to learn this now and finish this then and then this trick. And this was just, you have all day, you don't have to do any tricks that you don't want to do, just do stuff that you're stoked on and you want in a film.
And was there a, because you were a stacked crew.
Mm-hmm.
A lot super of stacked. Maggie Voisin, Taylor Brooke. I'm seeing too many to names. You were like 10 girls there, or maybe more.
There's a bunch.
Was there some pressure? Because I think there's some pressure, quote unquote pressure, because it's still fun time. But in movies where you're in the streets or you're in the park shoot and you know that you're with other great guys that are getting great shots, and there's that pressure of saying like, well, I don't want to be shown, like, or I don't know how you would say that, but I want to also have great shots, you know?
Yeah, totally. Obviously, like watching all the other girls and they would land stuff, and then you kind of get like fired up and you're like, oh, I need to get a clip. Like, I want to land something sick too. They kind of like in a more fun, encouraging aspect, like you see somebody else do something, you're stoked on it. And then you kind of like get these ideas from like, oh, like maybe this would be sick, or like you could hit this side hit while I hit this side hit, and like stuff like that. So it was really cool to be part of that.
Is there some new stuff that you ended up trying there? That, because sometimes in competitions, you're focused on big tricks, you know, going to do a dub I've never done. Whereas in a comp, in a movie, it might be just, oh, I'm going to try that grab variation I never get to try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely like watching some of the other girls, I got a little bit inspired from them to do a little bit more like creative, smaller tricks. So I remember Olivia was doing some like hand drags on the knuckle, and I was like, I've always wanted to like learn how to actually do that. So she kind of like walked me through it, and then I did a few, and they ended up like pretty good, and I was super stoked on that. And just doing like smaller variations, like usually if I do a Misty, it's like a Misty 7 with a grab. So I was like, okay, why don't I just do like some Misty 5s on a big jump and like lay it out and try and make it look sick. Yeah. So it was kind of fun to just do some more small, like almost scarier tricks, because you have like all this time in the air and you're trying to do a smaller trick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that? Was that your first like experience being part of a film?
Yeah, that was my first film project that I've ever done with anybody, so it was cool.
How was that in general, like the separation between, you know, competitions versus, you know, a film project is as mellow as it can be, in a sense that you're working towards a common goal and there's no competition at all. You're all just...
It definitely got me excited to do more of that stuff. Like, it's really cool just to have a really good girl crew and kind of feed off of each other's energy to like learn new tricks and stuff. And it was nice to have a little bit different atmosphere from the normal comp scene that I'm used to. So I do want to do more of it for sure in the future.
Right now we're talking, you just came back from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? It seems like everyone is down there. Yeah. Seems like it's the spot to be in September.
It was amazing. I think looking back, it's probably my favorite training camp we've ever done. I don't know if we really like lucked out with weather or if it's normally that nice, but we ended up with like 2 full weeks of sunshine, slushy, but not like overly slushy weather. And the park they build there is so perfect. Like, it's really good for beginning of the season coming back because they have a small line that you can hit. They have a medium line that you can hit that's like a slope course. And then they have a massive jump that you can hit to learn new tricks. They've got a variety of different rails. So it's kind of just a playground where you can work on anything you want to, which is so nice. We're kind of used to showing up at our first training camp and it's like one massive jump and you're kind of scared to do new tricks. So it was cool. And the atmosphere of New Zealand altogether is really good. They've got lots of activities to do after skiing. And yeah, it's awesome.
What's your vibe? Because let's say your season finishes in the spring, late in the spring. Mm-hmm. Then you get some skiing in Whistler in the summer, which is more having fun than anything else, I would guess. Then you have your summer break. Then you go to New Zealand in September and the start of the season is really close. Like you go to Europe after that and it starts. What's the vibe in New Zealand? Are you trying to like get your skiing legs back up? Are you trying new tricks? What's it like?
Yeah, I guess it's different for everybody. But for me, it was just like, I'm here to kind of get my legs back, get warmed up back into skiing, do some of the tricks that I've done last season, get used to grabbing again and the flow of skiing. So not necessarily learning new tricks, but certainly if I go back, given that they have such a nice jump, I would love to go back there next year and stay for a longer amount of time and warm up, but then spend the last couple of weeks just working on some new tricks.
Oh, yeah, because the jump you're talking about is the jumps from the jump from the Jossie Well Invitational?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's massive.
It seems like now people are using it after the comp, and we're seeing posts on Instagram every day of people like throwing the biggest tricks ever, like, or like progressing. It seems like
totally. A great jump for that. When we were there, like, I saw multiple quads, some from snowboarders, but also a couple from skiers, and triples super easy for all the boys. So it was a lot of progression that they were doing on that jump. And it makes sense because they built it really well, like perfect, easy, slow takeoff, really steep landing, pretty forgiving. So I definitely would like to go back and session that jump.
On the girl side, a lot of people talk about it being the golden age right now with all of you crushing it and progressing. You know, you're doing, like, if we look at your X Games, left dub 12, right dub 12, that's dope. Like, no one can say anything about that. It's crazy. What do you think is, and, you know, with the Olympics, switch 14, dub 16, it's big tricks. What do you think is next in the progression? Do you think we'll see some triples soon? Where do you see you and the other girls headed in that sense?
Yeah, I think it's only going up from here for sure. I don't think it's going to slow down all that much. I definitely think with the Olympics, it was a bit of a push for everybody to try and get some new stuff in. But I think within the next like 2 to 4 years, you're probably going to see some triples. And not only that, but both way 14s, both way 16s, and lining tricks up in slope runs where it's like three double runs or what are making you to finals. So that, I'm super excited to see that because I feel like everybody's been pushing each other to kind of get to that level. And it's cool because I think we're gaining a lot more respect in the sport and people are starting to see how talented girls are in the sport. And it's neat.
Yeah, the respect is there. Like Kelly Sildaru has done amazing with putting great rail runs that are totally tech. And also with jumps, like, you know, she had both sides switch 10, something like that.
Yeah.
But then Mathilde and Eileen and you and Olivia and others, I'm forgetting. It's really cool to see when you're all like, let's say at a X Games Big Air, when you're all next to each other, you see that it's next level now.
Yeah, it's so cool to be a part of that for sure. And kind of see what everybody else is doing and push each other and do more as much as we can.
So to end off the podcast, I got a couple questions from people on Patreon. First off, there's Raf Diaz who asks, What is your worst habit when you're skiing?
My worst habit. Okay, I can be sometimes a little bit of like a superstitious person, and I cannot go down the hill without like fixing my helmet. I hate when it's like starting to go back and stuff like that. So almost every time before I do a run, I'm like fixing my helmet and my goggles to make sure it's okay.
Sometimes people have weird habits also. Like Henrik mentioned to me that he likes to ski with his boots loose, which to me as a ski racer is crazy. Weird. Do you have anything like that, that you have some weird ways of going about it?
I don't do anything like that exactly, but I prefer my skis like one on each, like one specific ski on one foot and one on the like left foot. I think that's pretty common. A lot of people do that, but definitely
so
a little bit.
The one that's on each foot is always on that foot.
Yeah, it's always the same.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Sometimes I do it a bit, but it's like to have the graphic on the side it's supposed to be. But
yeah.
Yeah. And any other, how did you say those, any other superstitions you have?
Superstitions? Not really.
Do you have that with tricks where like, say you try a back four and you fall and you're like, ah, I shouldn't do back four in comps.
No, not like that. But definitely before I do certain tricks, like if I'm doing one of my doubles or something, or like for instance any like new trick that I'm doing in a big competition or something, I always go back on my phone like right before I do it. So if I'm gonna do my first like switch dub 10, I go on my phone and I watch a video of me doing it like on the airbag or like somewhere else, and like just watch it like four times, and then I'm like, okay, I got this.
Kind of visualization, but really like you're watching yourself and yeah
and kind of just go over, okay, like this is the takeoff, this is the set, this is where I spot, and just kind of like look at each step.
Do you think there's a bit of your skating background that goes into that, of like analyzing every step?
A little bit, yeah. I probably don't think about it as much, but you're probably right, it does come from that.
Yeah, or maybe also the training with Team Canada, where there's a lot of, you know, thought put into every trick.
Yeah. And it's just like a nice little reassurance, like I did this already, I can do it.
Another question now from Will Cameron is, what's it like for her being part of the golden age in women's skiing? And he adds, female comps right now are the best I've seen in over 10 years. So,
oh, that's nice.
We already touched on it, but how is it being part of that whole, I want to say squad, but like generation? It seems like from every country right now, people are really good.
It's amazing to be part of that, because it feels like you're part of something that's really progressing the sport and bringing people to watch. And it's just cool to see like the whole sport growing as a whole. So not necessarily even the tricks, just to see like how what we've done is really like growing the sport in general.
Because it's pushing you, like it gives you a lot of competition, so it's harder for you because there's a lot of great people, but I guess it's also motivating.
It's so motivating. Yeah, like it makes you want to learn new tricks, because you're like, okay, well this summer, like I don't know what so-and-so is doing, like they could be learning this, and you know, so it really like makes you more determined to try and push your own boundaries and like learn different stuff that you maybe necessarily wouldn't if you didn't think that people were trying to break some of the barriers.
And how's the vibe for all of you? Are you all like, let's say, because there's some in the top girls, let's say there's some from the States, from Canada, from Switzerland. How's the vibe country per country? Is everyone getting along really well? Is it more like split, not culturally, but like, you know, between countries?
Everybody gets along so well, which is the coolest part, I think. Like, all the girls are really close. Obviously, like, when you first come onto the circuit, it maybe takes a little bit of time before you really get to know everybody else. But everybody's super welcoming. We do lots of stuff together. And I think seeing the progression in the other nations is just pure excitement. Like, gives you a little bit of fire behind you and makes you excited for sure.
So right now, you're back in Ontario. Maybe taking a bit of a break before the season starts. What's up for you in the coming months? What's do you have a plan for this season? What's your goals? Or
it's pretty straight into it already. So I'm home for another like 4 days and then I go out to Europe. And my plan is to stay out there for probably like 2 months and just do the first 3-4 competitions and ski in between wherever I feel like, just depending on weather and what's open and stuff. So lots of time in Europe and then come home a little bit more for Christmas and then get back into the second half of the season.
Dope. Then X Games, all the World Cups, all of that.
Yeah.
And then anything that, like those events that we talked about, like Nines or Movie Project, that's more like during the winter, you see how everything unfolds.
Yeah. So it kind of depends on like invites for stuff, but definitely I will go back to Nines if I'm invited because that was so much fun. And I won't be doing any like filming projects or movies for myself personally. It's something I want to do in the future, but I don't think I'm ready quite yet this year and have some other stuff I still want to do before. But if opportunity arises to be part of somebody else's film, then for sure I'll go and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the big questions film-wise, let's say in the future or maybe in a dream scenario, in which aspect would you see yourself at, or would you want to explore like being, you know, more backcountry or powder stuff, more street stuff, more park shoot stuff? Where would you want to explore?
I would love to do something that kind of like encompasses all aspects of skiing. And I'd love to do some sort of project with both my brothers because we're all super into skiing. So it'd be cool to do some sort of like sibling film segment where like we're all in the backcountry, then we're all hitting urban rails and then do a park section. But that's probably something a little bit more long-term because I definitely need to upgrade my backcountry skiing abilities.
But that could be dope to see like the first time being that like, because for a lot of people they're, you know, going the backcountry is hard, but it's the same thing for everyone. Like for everyone, you have kind of that dream scenario that, oh, it'll be fun, but then it's like so much harder than you would think.
Yeah.
For the legs and, you know, for all of it.
Definitely. Yeah. It's definitely something I want to work into for sure. I need to get some more time in the backcountry and work up to that, but it would be super fun to have some sort of project like that.
Yeah. And do you have a home base for this season? Some people, or do you like, you're just moving around all the time?
We're moving around a lot. So I do have a home base. Like I live here in Ontario and I base out of here. So whenever I'm not traveling, I come home and spend some time with family. But honestly, it doesn't end up being all that much.
So it's so it's not as if like you were based in Whistler and could do some powell. You're like going from comp to comp and then it's back home.
Yeah. And maybe in the future I'll change that. Like I would like to get my own place at some point. I don't know where, but it would be nice to have a home base that's also closer to a little bit bigger mountain where I can do some different types of skiing when I'm not competing.
Yeah. So I guess that's it. Thanks a lot for doing an episode, Megan. It's really cool talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I had a blast.
And hope you have a great season. Hope everything goes well for you and you get some more X Games medals. Cheers.
Cheers.
So this is it for episode 34 with Megan Oldham. I hope you enjoyed our talk. It was super good chatting with her. Big shout out to the sponsors once again. Axis Board Shop, Planks Clothing, and Dick Ann's Restaurants. Peace.